While across the nation, the cultural and political tug of war over health care rages on, locally, healers keep on healing. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the National Foundation for Transplants. Right now, hundreds of Tampa residents need an organ transplant they can't afford. You can join National Foundation for Transplants Operation Second Chance at transplants.org to learn how to help give someone a second chance at life.
I'm Robin Sessingham. Florida Matters recently hosted a panel discussion in front of a live audience on the campus of the University of South Florida, St. Petersburg. We talked about how people in the Tampa Bay area are caring for residents who don't have health insurance. Today, we'll hear highlights from that conversation with the experts and also questions from the audience. Joining me to talk about this is Dr. Jay Wolfson, Associate Vice President of USF Health and Senior Associate Dean, USF's Morsani College of Medicine. Dr. Wolfson is a lawyer in private practice and a researcher and analyst in healthcare law, policy, safety, and finance. Dr. Ajoy Kumar is medical director of the St. Petersburg Free Clinic, chief medical officer of Bayfront Health St. Petersburg, and president of the Florida Academy of Family Physicians, and WUSF's Julio Ochoa, the editor of Health News Florida and the producer of a series of stories about free clinics in the Tampa Bay area. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great to be here.
Dr. Kumar, I'm going to start off with you. Tell us a little bit about the St. Petersburg Free Clinic. What's your typical patient like?
St. Petersburg Free Clinic really exists for people that don't have any access, uninsured, underinsured, somebody that can work 2-3 jobs. They'll come in and get their health care, and the health care that they do get is the basics of health care.
Dr. Wolfson, you've been working on these issues for a long time, and you helped create the Hillsborough County Health Plan. Could you explain briefly what that is and how does that work?
The Hillsborough County Health Plan was created in the late 1980s. It was a brainchild of then newly elected Commissioner Phyllis Buzanski. At about that time, there were a lot of discussions about a big segment of our community that did not have easy access to health care, even though they were employed. They were the employed uninsured. And the solution that we sculpted was the community owing up to the opportunity to improve its own health by investing in the health of those folks, because the uninsured, if they have no access, wind up waiting until they are so very sick that they wind up in the emergency rooms of Tampa General and BayCare and Bayfront, and cost us all a lot more money. So the solution became a combination of a financial one and a political one that resulted after 3 years of lobbying the legislature, sometimes going door to door in many communities, creating what is now the model of a half-cent sales tax in Florida, which became the national model for bringing in portions of tax dollars to fund a system of care that coordinated with a focus on primary care at the community level. And it's still operating. We're very pleased about it.
And Julio Ochoa, your series on free clinics was a special project for the University of Southern California Center for Health Journalism's National Fellowship. Why did you decide that this was an important topic for you to report on?
Well, we wanted to report on the uninsured, so we wanted to go where the uninsured were. And at the time when we were pitching the project, Trump had come into office, the Senate had been turned over to Republicans, the House was Republicans, they had been talking for years about repealing Obamacare, and it had been estimated if that would happen that millions more would be without insurance. So we wanted to go and find those uninsured and report on them. Well, forward a year later and Obamacare is still around, but what we did find from going into these clinics was that the Affordable Care Act, though it does a wonderful job covering millions of people, it doesn't get everybody. And there's a lot of people that fall through the gaps.
So Dr. Kumar, you said that you do mainly primary care in the clinic. What if someone shows up and they've got something seriously wrong with them that you diagnose in the clinic?
That's a very difficult situation. So from our standpoint, what we do is we try to partner with a lot of physicians locally to actually do some pro bono work in our clinic, from cardiologists to GI physicians that donate their time and their expertise in their offices to help those patients out. But considering the volume of patients that we have and the needs that are so numerous, it is very difficult to get the level of care, especially in terms of specialty care, surgical care, labs, imaging, even though we have partnerships with BayCare, it's difficult to get all those together
but
for
I
that patient.
That's amazing. So I didn't realize they're specialists that offer their pro bono care. What about, I mean, the medications? What about,
absolutely.
I'm thinking of something like cancer that needs radiation or chemotherapy.
Something Dr. Wolfson talked about is really important, this whole process right here, is that you're building partnerships. There's just no way for a facility for us to manage all those cases without partnerships. We partner with whoever we can to provide us with medications on site or reduce medications, whether it's the pharmacies, whether it's Publix, whether it's Walmart, whoever you have. When it comes to cancer care, unfortunately, a diagnosis of cancer is kind of beneficial. And the reason why is you have access to Medicaid.
That's something I didn't
know. And
that's
just the reality of the situation. It's really sad that the sicker that you get, the more access to funds that you have to go get that care.
Mm-hmm. Julio, I was going to ask you, you were reporting on free clinics around the area. What was your impression?
They seem like just a normal doctor's office. I mean, they run them just like that. And I mean, one thing that struck me was the quality of care that the patients get there with doctors like Dr. Kumar, just some of the best doctors, I believe, in the city and county. And you talked about cancer. Just about every clinic that I walked into say, oh, we have a special arrangement with Moffitt. If we have somebody who comes in and they have cancer and we contact Moffitt, Moffitt will see them for free.
That's good to know.
Right.
I mean, that's
great care.
Nice. From my observation, it seems like people are more willing to support local healthcare initiatives than national initiatives, whether it's a half-cent sales tax for an indigent care hospital or a community support and fundraising for their local free clinic. People get enthusiastic about their local healthcare facility. Dr. Wolfson, is that what you
think? I think that's probably true. You know, we're really a very selfish society overall, and the idea of healthcare charity is actually becoming a smaller and smaller portion of what people give, including physicians. There are fewer and fewer physician volunteers, and as societies, as communities, it's really up to us locally to decide what's valuable for us. And unless and until we say healthcare is important and it's valuable because we get something out of it, we cannot just make the argument that it's good to do good things for people, because that gets tiresome. Because the people who are going to really help support these things are the volunteers, but you need money. You need money from pharmaceutical companies, you need money from laboratories, you need money from some specialists, and you have to make the financial argument that there's value in keeping people well and catching things early. When you make that kind of economic argument and people say, I understand that, then you can make the charitable argument, would you help donate some time, some money, and some space? And that takes the kind of time and effort it took, you know, to create any free clinic, to do the Hillsborough County Healthcare Plan. This is a political activity.
Dr. Kumar.
Yeah, there's a lot I have to agree with that. We don't have healthcare in this country. We have sick care in this country. There is entire industries around here that really support you being sick. Billions of dollars are made based on that. We cannot run healthcare on the cheap. Taking care of people costs money. It's going to take resources. But what you need to look at, too, is how efficiently are we using those resources? There is a lot of waste in healthcare currently right now. There's a lot of things that we're doing, duplicating, triplicating, that we need to really clamp down on so that the right services get there at the right time for the right person.
All right, let me pose a question then. Probably the biggest impact people without insurance could have on their lives is to diet, to get some exercise, to stop smoking, and to stop drinking so much. So would insurance make a difference in those lives, or would money be better spent in public messaging and education?
A lot of people have asked me, what do I do to manage my health care? Simple, don't get sick. But the reality is, it's hard to do that in this fast-paced, very stressful world. So we need to be supporting the primary preventive things that'll get us to that point where we're not getting sick. That includes supporting meals program. That includes encouraging healthy weight reduction. Those kind of things to the employer, you need to incentivize people to do a lot of those kind of things. So yes, I think a lot more money needs to be spent on the front end because we're spending at least 5 to 6 times on the back end.
Dr. Wolfson, you told me in some correspondence leading up to the panel that you thought it would be a disaster to expand our current healthcare system. Why is that?
Absolutely, because as Dr. Kumar suggested, there's not only a tremendous amount of waste, but so much of what we do doesn't work. We have the most expensive healthcare system in the world. We spend more money on pharmaceuticals, on clinical activities, on hospitalizations, and the outcomes, for the most part, with a few exceptions, are worse than most industrialized and other non-industrialized countries in the world by a huge margin. Add to that real fraud and abuse. So we have to say, what do we expect in our community from our healthcare system? It's not just that there are physicians and hospitals and clinics and pharmacies available, and it's not just that people have a health insurance card, which if it has a high deductible doesn't do you any good, as is the case with most of the Affordable Care Act policies. We have to make both providers and patients and their families responsible for that, and what makes people responsible, whether we like to say it or not, is money. We have to financially incentivize behaviors and financially disincentivize bad behaviors. And that rubs some people the wrong way, but we can no longer afford to provide the kind of care in the system we have, the way we've been doing it for the past 50 or 60 years. We're going to have to turn it upside down and on its head.
Well, until that happens, we have free clinics. Julio, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. You talked to doctors in some of these clinics. Did they talk to you about why they were doing what they did?
Just out of the goodness of their hearts. I mean, that's overwhelming what they said. Some started when they were in residency and just continued on. Some had retired and just wanted to get back into it.
You all mentioned that there were fewer and fewer doctors willing to do this, which surprised me. Is litigation one reason, or fear of litigation
no,
for that?
There's a lot of medical students and residents that I've come across that go out and do medical missions. That's what I did as well, too. So a lot of students, including at USF, they have a clinic there that's run by students. But once you start getting in the process of life, other things start happening, in which it makes it very difficult on the time that you have. We already talk about right now the amount of time physicians spend in clinics with prior authorizations. Most of you, when you go to your doctor's office, they have a computer there. They're busy looking at their computer, barely looking at you, and they're just trying to cram through the day to get stuff done, but on average, they have at least 3 to 4 hours of more computer work to do when they get home. So when you're doing all this kind of stuff, time becomes a real premium. So you have to really start looking at, where am I really putting in my hours? What do I really want to do? And if I'm married, if I have kids, there's other things that I need to be taking care of as well. So if we were able to free up a lot of these physicians from the administrative burdens that they have, they would have more time to do these. And I would tell you, a lot of family docs, a lot of primary care docs, a lot of subspecialty docs would love to do this. It's just a matter of time.
If you could wave your wand, I bet there's one thing every day that you're cursing or you're wishing for, or you think this would make my life so much easier.
I guess the biggest thing for myself would be to have a multidisciplinary, multi-business way of managing one patient. Whether it's with private industry or with government, that's what I would like to have.
Okay, I'm going to grant part of your wish. It happened when 3 of the largest corporations in the world came together, Berkshire Hathaway, Amazon, and J.P. Morgan. They've got 1.2 million employees, and including their beneficiaries, it's going to be close to 3 million, 4 million people. They're saying, we are going to start at home, which is, by the way, what every major employer should do. And recognize that this is my home and I need to make my family healthy. And we have 3 extraordinarily smart individuals in these companies who are saying, we're going to make it a not-for-profit venture. We're going to put the money, the technology, and the brain power to the table. We haven't decided exactly what we're going to do yet. We know what the problem is, and we're going to start fixing it as a real levered force. And as part of that, this...
You're holding up your
this,
cell phone.
This is the hospital of the future, the healthcare system of the future. We can do ophthalmologic exams, psychiatric monitoring. With peripherals, we can manage blood pressure, diabetes. Access and transportation in Hillsborough and Pinellas County are among the most significant barriers to getting in to see healthcare. You can do it on a cell phone. if we could put more of our resources that we do have available, I know that many of our partners are interested in that. That's a big part of what we're doing. So we're on the way to partially granting your vision and wish, but we can't do it alone. We need all of you and everyone who's listening and all of the partners we have.
You're listening to Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham. We'll be right back. I'm Robin Sessingham. This is Florida Matters. We're listening to highlights from our recent town hall event about caring for people without health insurance. The panelists include Dr. Jay Wolfson, Associate Vice President of USF Health, Dr. Ajoy Kumar, Medical Director of the St. Petersburg Free Clinic, and WUSF's Julio Ochoa, who produced a series of stories about free clinics in the Tampa Bay area. Now we'll hear some questions from the audience.
My name is Joel Strom. I'm a volunteer in the free clinic in St. Petersburg. I also was the director of cardiology at USF. I think you're trying to blame the wrong problem. The fact is we need universal health care and universal health insurance.
Joel, did you bring your wallet?
Yes, I did.
Okay, then, well, are you prepared to contribute between 30 and 50% more, maybe 60% more, of taxes that you pay in order to make that possible? Oh, then you're a communist. So the issue, yes. and Dr. Kumar noted, this gets back to the fundamental question of culture. What we expect and what we are prepared to do. This nation was not created in a socialist construct. The only part of it that, at least in the healthcare component of it, that's anywhere near socialist is the VA, in terms of the way it's organized and managed. The rest of it is firmly grounded in the principles of Adam Smith, competition. I've got mine, you go get yours. I am not my brother's keeper. Other countries, Canada, the rest of Europe, are prepared culturally to abdicate individual expectations and prerogatives in exchange for the knowledge that they're doing well for other people. We just ain't that way at heart for the most part.
Dr. Wilson's absolutely correct on the origins and the nature of our country. Now, there are some things that you said in terms of universal health care. I think we're making a slow march towards universal health care. We're starting to see with the consolidations of the hospitals. We're starting to see it with consolidations of the insurers. Pretty soon the insurers are going to start buying hospitals. They're going to set up their own plans. Then they're going to incorporate EMS. Then it's a very slow march to what you're talking about.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name is Joshua Barnett. I manage healthcare services for a county here in Florida. And some communities have systems that are constructed based on the public health logic that directs people to services earlier, that are more integrated and more affordable, while some communities have emergency department services. What could you speak about the logic behind having a community that's really focused on having emergency department services rather than these earlier models you spoke of?
It's very interesting. In fact, there's a lot of counties within the United States that are now looking at EMS response units going out and doing that far forward medicine.
Just explain what that is.
You take the EMS unit, you send them to the patient's house if they have a question. Do they really need to go to the ED, or can they get some care managed at that site right there, and then they follow up with the physician the day after? So what the EMS unit usually does is they go out there, do their vital signs, does a check on the patient, and to really see whether or not they need to come to the ER, and they have contact and communications with the physicians, and they're able to make a decision at the point of care, which is home.
Is that cutting down on some of the ER visits?
Yes.
My name's Ellen Malarkey. I am a family nurse practitioner in South St. Pete. And one thing that is a common theme here is access to care. You know, we just cannot get our patients in to be seen. And nurse practitioners are the perfect filler for this. But the problem in Florida is that we can't fill these positions because nurse practitioners do not want to come to Florida to practice, because nurse practitioners are not allowed to have their full scope of practice here in Florida. And so what Floridians need to do if they want to improve and increase their access to care is to vote for a full scope of practice.
What are they not allowed to do?
I can't open my own practice without a physician supervising me.
Okay, so there are a lot of great nurse practitioners out there. Some of the things that we worry about from a physician standpoint is a lot of those nurse practitioners have not practiced for a very long time, have not had that training to manage all those things as an independent practitioner. For example, there's a lot of nursing schools out there that will sit there and say, you want to go into nursing, come into nursing. We'll take you. It'll be an online degree. Once you get your bachelor's, you go get your master's, you go get your ARMP, then you get your DNP. You've never seen a patient. And all of a sudden, you go out and you get independent practice. I'm not saying that's everybody, but that's a lot of folks. While there is an avenue for nurse practitioners to take part, I think it really happens to be better, really, in a team-based approach.
With all due respect, you're wrong. The average nurse practitioner has 15 years of clinical practice before they go to school, whereas there's lots of new doctors out there that have, you know, they may have had their rotation in a neurological rotation, and they didn't see everything either.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Chloe Keswick. My question is primarily for Dr. Kumar. Mm-hmm. What legislation or policies would you like to see from lawmakers on both a statewide and a federal level that would help you address, you know, more of the concerns of the people who come into your office or encourage more doctors to work with you?
Yeah, more funding coming to the free clinics, more funding coming to what we call the teaching health centers. And the teaching health centers are basically educational platforms where people are getting educated to become physicians, not at the hospital, but at the location that they're working at, whether it's a community health center, free clinic, wherever it be. You need to support education of where the work really needs to take place.
I'm Ed Briggs, and I'm the chair of the Florida Coalition of Advanced Practice Nurses. Community health centers are great, and the free clinics are a wonderful structure.
Right.
But how do you meet the needs of the rural uninsured who don't have access to those clinics?
That is a fabulous question, because the way things are moving in healthcare, they're moving away from the rural communities and centralizing everything near the cities. So people are forced to transfer 30, 40, 100 miles to go get basics of care, specialty care. And then once you send them to the place that's 100 miles away, how do you get them back? Because the insurances aren't going to pay for that to send them back. And then when you do finally get them to send back, how are they going to follow up with all their medical conditions? There's no specialist. You could do telemedicine as much as you can, but sometimes you just need to have the face-to-face, human-to-human interaction.
In the short term, though, the last point you mentioned, I think, is a good place to put some resources. If you're talking about $50 million, $50 million can go a very far way for telemedicine in rural communities. Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico have had exceptional good luck managing care telemedically post-discharge, once they have to get to the hospital, post-discharge at home, and for the primary care and the consulting stuff for distance medicine up front. It's not the full answer, but it helps a lot.
Great question.
Just a quick add-on to that. Do you find Florida legislators are supportive of telemedicine legislation?
Yes and no. They support it. They're not willing to pay for it just yet through Medicaid, because practitioners, for one thing, are saying, we're not sure we want to let go of the money in direct contact, and we have to figure out a way to reimburse, and that's coming.
Is this what you're talking about? My brother-in-law had a heart attack last summer in Lake Placid, New York, which had nothing, no hospital or anything, but whoever was running the clinic, the nurse that was running the clinic, got on the computer with somebody in Plattsburgh who told her what to do, and she was able to save his life.
So who's really good at doing this is the VA. I mean, they had to invest in all these technologies. They do it in Afghanistan, any place around the world. So there's a lot that we can learn from the VA system, from the military system, that we can actually employ here, and I think some of those things are starting to happen, especially with the EMS systems. But there's a lot that we can do locally, but the finance component of it needs to be managed as well, too, in order to make it work.
My name is Jane Strom. I have a question for Julio Ochoa. And my question is, what made you the most optimistic and what made you the most pessimistic in visiting the free clinics?
Well, the optimism definitely was from the doctors that were caring for the patients, to see them volunteering their time. And the pessimism is what they're speaking about up here. And I can tell you a short story about one patient that I met, a guy named Steve Peters, who had lost his job, lost his business during the economic downturn, lost his insurance, and his health went bad. And he ended up in a hospital with a blood clot in his leg in a bad situation. And the hospital fixed him up, discharged him, but before they discharged him, they said, you need follow-up care. You need to go to a doctor once a week. You need to check your levels, your blood levels, and you need to take this medication. So he went to the same doctor that treated him in the hospital, and that doctor denied him because he had no means to pay. So he went home, and he got sicker and sicker until he had to go back to the hospital and he was on his deathbed. You know, while he was there, someone from the Brandon Free Clinic came in and said, hey, when you get discharged, you can come see us and we'll take care of you. He did that, and he, now he's working again, and he's doing much better. But it just spoke to the problem in this country with care, that we are so good at giving people emergency care and critical care, but when it comes to primary care that costs so much cheaper, we just do a horrible job at that. And we really let this guy down until he found one of these free clinics.
So if it could have been a simple, if somebody at the hospital, they do have those social workers at the hospital, had said to him, you don't have insurance, here's a card for the Brandon Free Clinic.
Sure, right.
I mean, that seems like they're just missing that little bit of communication somehow.
Sure.
Mike Meehan from Manatee County. I'm a supporter of the Turning Points Health Clinic in Manatee County. Further to that point, the Clearwater Free Clinic had a pilot program where they put a caseworker in the hospital, one of the hospitals there in Clearwater, and she liaised with the under 200% patients, and after they were discharged from the hospital, they were taken care of by the Clearwater Clinic. And the savings to the hospital by foregoing the readmission to these very sick people that Julio was talking about was huge, in the tens of thousands of dollars. So now the lady who is running the Clearwater Free Clinic is agitating for a permanent full-time caseworker on behalf of her clinic.
You bring up a very interesting point. Care coordination, care transitions are huge. But when you're talking about having an FTE, full-time equivalent, that's paying somebody to do that job, we have to get away of allowing employers to utilize that level of FTE that does not bring in any kind of money. That's a big issue here. A lot of people want to do that. A lot of people want to help out with that. But paying for that person's salary, their healthcare, and everything, when they're not really generating any income, however, they're saving tons of money on the back end. We need to focus on that part, and we don't do a very good job as a country on focus on cost savings.
Thanks for joining us for this special Florida Matters Town Hall taped at the University of South Florida, St. Petersburg. You can always find us online at WUSFnews.org and listen to our podcast, Florida Matters More. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The producer is Stephanie Colombini, and the engineer is Craig George. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.